Chapter 47. Some years ago, and at work, well, you might now have made a public singer, though I don't think your voice would have counted for much in public. For the stage, your personal charms and intelligence might then have told without the present drawback of inexperience, lack of discipline, lack of instruction. Certainly, klezmer seemed cruel, but his feeling was the reverse of cruel. Our speech, even when we are most single-minded, can never take its line absolutely from one impulse, but klezmer's was, as far as possible, directed by compassion for poor Gwendolyn's ignorant eagerness to enter on the course of which he saw all the miserable details with a definiteness which he could not if he would have conveyed to her mind. Gwendolyn, however, was not convinced. Her self-opinion rallied, and since the counselor whom he had called in gave a decision of such severe peremptoriness, she was tempted to think that his judgment was not only fallible but biased. It occurred to her that a simpler and wiser step for her to have taken would have been to send a letter through the post to the manager of a London theater, asking him to make an appointment. She would make no further reference to her singing. Klezmer, she saw, had set himself against her singing. But she felt equal to arguing with him about her going on the stage, and she answered in a resistant tone, "I understood, of course, that no one can be a finished actress at once. It may be impossible to tell beforehand whether I should succeed, but that seems to me a reason why I should try. I should have thought that I might have taken an engagement at a theater meanwhile, so as to earn money and study at the same time." "Can't be done, my dear Miss Harleth, I speak plainly, it can't be done. I must clear your mind of these notions which have no more resemblance to reality than a pantomime. Ladies and gentlemen think that, when they have made their toilet and drawn on their gloves, they are as presentable on the stage as in a drawing room. No manager thinks that. With all your grace and charm, if you were to present yourself as an aspirant to the stage, a manager would either require you to pay as an amateur for being allowed to perform, or he would tell you to go and be taught, trained to bear yourself on the stage, as a horse, however beautiful, must be trained for the circus, to say nothing of that study which would enable you to personate a character consistently and animate it with the natural language of face, gesture, and tone. For you to get an engagement fit for you straight away is out of the question." "I really cannot understand that," said Gwendolyn, rather haughtily. Then, checking herself, she added in another tone, "She'll be obliged to you if you will explain how it is that such poor actresses get engaged. I have been to the theater several times, and I am sure there were actresses who seemed to me to act not at all well, and who were quite plain." "Ah, my dear Miss Harleth, that is the easy criticism of the buyer. We who buy slippers toss away this pair and the other as clumsy, but there went an apprenticeship to the making of them. Excuse me, you could not at present teach one of those actresses, but there is certainly much that she could teach you. For example, she can pitch her voice so as to be heard. 10-1 you could not do it till after many trials. Merely to stand and move on the stage is an art that requires practice. It is understood that we are not now talking of a commerce in a petty theater who earns the wages of a needlewoman. That is out of the question for you." "Of course I must earn more than that," said Gwendolyn, with a sense of wincing rather than of being refuted. "But I think I could soon learn to do tolerably well all those little things you have mentioned. I am not so very stupid. And even in Paris, I am sure, I saw two actresses playing important ladies' parts who were not at all ladies and quite ugly. I suppose I have no particular talent, but I must think it is an advantage, even on the stage, to be a lady and not a perfect fright." "Ah, let us understand each other," said Klezmer, with a flash of new meaning. I was speaking of what you would have to go through if you aimed at becoming a real artist, if you took music and the drama as a higher vocation in which you would strive after excellence. On that head, what I have said stands fast. You would find after your education in doing things slackly for 1 and 20 years great difficulties in study. You would find mortifications in the treatment you would get when you presented yourself on the footing of skill. You would be subjected to tests. People would no longer feign not to see your blunders. You would at first only be accepted on trial. You would have to bear what I may call a glaring insignificance. Any success must be won by the utmost patience. You would have to keep your place in a crowd, and after all it is likely you would lose it, and get out of sight. If you determine to face these hardships and still try, you will have the dignity of a high purpose, even though you may have chosen unfortunately. You will have some merit, though you may win no prize. You have asked my judgment on your chances of winning. I don't pretend to speak absolutely, but measuring probabilities, my judgment is, you will hardly achieve more than mediocrity. Klezmer had delivered himself with emphatic rapidity, and now paused a moment. Gwendolyn was motionless, looking at her hands, which lay over each other on her lap, till the deep-toned, long-drawn but with which he resumed, had a startling effect, and made her look at him again. But there are certainly other ideas, other dispositions with which a young lady may take up an art, that will bring her before the public. She may rely on the unquestioned power of her beauty as a passport. She may desire to exhibit herself to an admiration which dispenses with skill. This goes a certain way on the stage. Not in music. But on the stage, beauty is taken when there is nothing more commanding to be had. Not without some drilling, however. As I have said before, technicalities have in any case to be mastered. But these accepted, we have here nothing to do with art. The woman who takes up this career is not an artist. She is usually one who thinks of entering on a luxurious life by a short and easy road, perhaps by marriage. That is her most brilliant chance, and the rarest. Still, her career will not be luxurious to begin with. She can hardly earn her own poor bread independently at once, and the indignities she will be liable to are such as I will not speak of. I desire to be independent, said Gwendolyn, deeply stung and confusedly apprehending some scorn for herself in Klezmer's words. That was my reason for asking whether I could not get an immediate engagement. Of course I cannot know how things go on about theaters. But I thought that I could have made myself independent. I have no money, and I will not accept help from anyone. Her wounded pride could not rest without making this disclaimer. It was intolerable to her that Klezmer should imagine her to have expected other help from him than advice. That is a hard saying for your friends, said Klezmer, recovering the gentleness of tone with which he had begun the conversation. I have given you pain. That was inevitable. I was bound to put the truth, the unvarnished truth, before you. I have not said I will not say you will do wrong to choose the hard, climbing path of an endeavoring artist. You have to compare its difficulties with those of any less hazardous, any more private course which opens itself to you. If you take that more courageous resolve, I will ask leave to shake hands with you on the strength of our Freemasonry, where we are all vowed to the service of art, and to serve her, by helping every fellow servant. Gwendolyn was silent, again looking at her hands. She felt herself very far away from taking the resolve that would enforce acceptance, and after waiting an instant or two, Klezmer went on with deepened seriousness. Where there is the duty of service, there must be the duty of accepting it. The question is not one of personal obligation. And in relation to practical matters immediately affecting your future, excuse my permitting myself to mention in confidence an affair of my own. I am expecting an event which would make it easy for me to exert myself on your behalf in furthering your opportunities of instruction and residence in London under the care, that is, of your family without need for anxiety on your part. If you resolve to take art as a bread study, you need only undertake the study at first. The bread will be found without trouble. The event, I mean, is my marriage. In fact, you will receive this as a matter of confidence, my marriage with Miss Arrowpoint, which will more than double such right as I have to be trusted by you as a friend. Your friendship will have greatly risen in value for her by your having adopted that generous labor. Gwendolyn's face had begun to burn. That Klezmer was about to marry Miss Arrowpoint caused her no surprise, and at another moment she would have amused herself in quickly imagining the scenes that must have occurred at Quetcham. But what engrossed her feeling, what filled her imagination now, was the panorama of her own immediate future that Klezmer's words seemed to have unfolded. The suggestion of Miss Arrowpoint as a patroness was only another detail added to its repulsiveness. Klezmer's proposal to help her seemed an additional irritation after the humiliating judgment he had passed on her capabilities. His words had really bitten into her self-confidence, and turned it into the pain of a bleeding wound, and the idea of presenting herself before other judges was now poisoned with the dread that they also might be harsh, they also would not recognize the talent she was conscious of. But she controlled herself, and rose from her seat, before she made any answer. It seemed natural that she should pause. She went to the piano and looked absently at leaves of music, pinching up the corners. At last she turned toward Klezmer and said, with almost her usual air of proud equality, which in this interview had not been hitherto perceptible, "I congratulate you sincerely, Herr Klezmer. I think I never saw anyone so admirable as Miss Arrowpoint. And I have to thank you for every sort of kindness this morning. But I can't decide now. If I make the resolve you have spoken of, I will use your permission, I will let you know. But I fear the obstacles are too great. In any case, I am deeply obliged to you. It was very bold of me to ask you to take this trouble." Klezmer's inward remark was, "She will never let me know." But with the most thorough respect in his manner, he said, "Command me at any time. There is an address on this card which will always find me with little delay." When he had taken up his hat, and was going to make his bow, Gwendolyn's better self, conscious of an ingratitude which the clear-seeing Klezmer must have penetrated, made a desperate effort to find its way above the stifling layers of egoistic disappointment and irritation. Looking at him with a glance of the old gaiety, she put out her hand, and said with a smile, "If I take the wrong road, it will not be because of your flattery. God forbid that you should take any road but one, where you will find and give happiness," said Klezmer, fervently. Then, in foreign fashion, he touched her fingers lightly with his lips, and in another minute she heard the sound of his departing wheels getting more distant on the gravel. Gwendolyn had never in her life felt so miserable. No sob came, no passion of tears, to relieve her. Her eyes were burning, and the noonday only brought into more dreary clearness the absence of interest from her life. All memories, all objects, the pieces of music displayed, the open piano, the very reflection of herself in the glass seemed no better than the packed-up shows of a departing fair. For the first time since her consciousness began, she was having a vision of herself on the common level, and had lost the innate sense that there were reasons why she should not be slighted, elbowed, jostled, treated like a passenger with a third-class ticket, in spite of private objections on her own part. She did not move about. The prospects begotten by disappointment were too oppressively preoccupying. She threw herself into the shadiest corner of a settee, and pressed her fingers over her burning eyelids. Every word that Klezmer had said seemed to have been branded into her memory, as most words are which bring with them a new set of impressions, and make an epoch for us. Only a few hours before, the dawning smile of self-contentment rested on her lips as she vaguely imagined a future suited to her wishes. It seemed but the affair of a year or so for her to become the most approved Juliet of the time. Or, if Klezmer encouraged her idea of being a singer, to proceed by more gradual steps to her place in the opera, while she won money and applause by occasional performances. Why not? At home, at school, among acquaintances, as he had been used to have her conscious superiority admitted, and as he had moved in a society where everything, from low arithmetic to high art, is of the amateur kind, politely supposed to fall short of perfection, only because gentlemen and ladies are not obliged to do more than they like, otherwise they would probably give forth abler writings, and show themselves more commanding artists than any the world is at present obliged to put up with. The self-confident visions that had beguiled her were not of a highly exceptional kind, and as he had at least shown some nationality in consulting the person who knew the most, and had flattered her the least. In asking Klezmer's advice, however, she had rather been borne up by a belief in his latent admiration than bent on knowing anything more unfavorable that might have lain behind his slight objections to her singing, and the truth as he had asked for, with an expectation that it would be agreeable, had come like a lacerating thong. Too old should have begun 7 years ago. You will not, at best, achieve more than mediocrity. Hard, incessant work, uncertain praise, bread coming slowly, scantily, perhaps not at all mortifications, people no longer feigning not to see your blunders, glaring insignificance, all these phrases rankled in her, and even more galling was the hint that she could only be accepted on the stage as a beauty who hoped to get a husband. The dignities that she might be visited with had no very definite form for her, but the mere association of anything called indignity with herself roused a resentful alarm. And along with the vaguer images which were raised by those biting words, came the precise conception of disagreeables which her experience enabled her to imagine. How could she take her mama and the four sisters to London, if it were not possible for her to earn money at once? And as for submitting to be a protege, and asking her mama to submit with her to the humiliation of being supported by Miss Arrowpoint, that was as bad as being a governess. Nay, worse, for suppose the end of all her study to be as worthless as Klezmer clearly expected it to be, the sense of favors received and never repaid would embitter the miseries of disappointment. Klezmer doubtless had magnificent ideas about helping artists, but how could he know the feelings of ladies in such matters? It was all over. As he had entertained a mistaken hope, and there was an end of it. An end of it, said Gwendolyn, aloud, starting from her seat as she heard the steps and voices of her mama and sisters coming in from church. She hurried to the piano, and began gathering together her pieces of music with assumed diligence, while the expression on her pale face and in her burning eyes was what would have suited a woman enduring a wrong which she might not resent, but would probably revenge. "Well, my darling," said gentle Mrs. Davilow, entering, "I see by the wheel marks that Klezmer has been here. Have you been satisfied with the interview?" As he had some guesses as to its object, but felt timid about implying them. "Satisfied, Mama? Oh, yes," said Gwendolyn, in a high, hard tone, for which she must be excused, because she dreaded a scene of emotion. If she did not set herself resolutely to feign proud indifference, she felt that she must fall into a passionate outburst of despair, which would cut her Mama more deeply than all the rest of their calamities. "Your uncle and aunt were disappointed at not seeing you," said Mrs. Davilow, coming near the piano and watching Gwendolyn's movements. I only said that you wanted rest." "Quite right, Mama," said Gwendolyn, in the same tone, turning to put away some music. "Am I not to know anything now, Gwendolyn? Am I always to be in the dark?" said Mrs. Davilow, too keenly sensitive to her daughter's manner and expression not to fear that something painful had occurred. "There is really nothing to tell now, Mama," said Gwendolyn, in a still higher voice. I had a mistaken idea about something I could do. Herr Klezmer has undeceived me. That is all. Don't look and speak in that way, my dear child. I cannot bear it," said Mrs. Davilow, breaking down. She felt an undefinable terror. Gwendolyn looked at her a moment in silence, biting her inner lip, Then she went up to her, and putting her hands on her mama's shoulders, said, with a drop in her voice to the lowest undertone, "Mama, don't speak to me now. It is useless to cry and waste our strength over what can't be altered. You will live at Sawyer's cottage, and I am going to the bishop's daughters. There is no more to be said. Things cannot be altered, and who cares? It makes no difference to anyone else what we do. We must try not to care ourselves. We must not give way. I dread giving way. Help me to be quiet." Mrs. Davilow was like a frightened child under her daughter's face and voice. Her tears were arrested, and she went away in silence. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.